Ukraine will soon receive an unprecedented amount of new weapons systems thanks to a deal made by a group of some 50 nations today. But the weapons do not include the one item that Ukraine calls its priority, Western tanks. Nick Schifrin reports.
For Ukraine's Western military support, today was the best of times and the worst of times. For the first time, the U.S. will send Stryker armored personnel carriers. That's in addition to hundreds more Bradley fighting vehicles and European armored vehicles designed to provide Ukraine with the fundamental building blocks for how modern armies fight. It's a major upgrade to Ukraine's mostly Soviet-era armor to help Kyiv try and re-seize occupied territory. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin.
This is a very, very capable package, and they, you know, if employed properly, it will enable them to be successful.
But Ukraine did not get the item it says it most needs, Western tanks. There are 2,000 German Leopard 2 tanks across Europe. Germany today resisted calls to send its own tanks or allow other countries to re-export their Leopard tanks to Ukraine. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
And I can thank you hundreds of times, and it will be absolutely just and fair, given all that we have already done. But hundreds of thank you are not hundreds of thanks.
Poland's Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki.
The Germans are defending themselves against this like a devil protects himself against holy water.
The U.S. and Europe are upgrading Soviet-era tanks. But the U.S., too, has refused to send its own M1 Abrams tanks. U.S. officials say its jet engine and jet fuel make it unsustainable. Germany's government says they'll only approve tanks as part of what they call a transatlantic lockstep decision.
We don't fear anything. We have just responsibility for our population in Germany and in Europe. And we have to balance all the pros and cons before we decide things like that.
There's a reason you have tanks. The tank can absorb hits from almost anything.
Retired General Ben Hodges is the former commander of the U.S. Army in Europe.
The gun it has, the commander's station, the ability to find targets, it's unsurpassed. So whether it's an Abrams or Leopard, that kind of capability would be needed as part of the spearhead.
When the U.S. Army fights, it uses what it calls combined arms, infantry, artillery, but also tanks that the U.S. sells all over the world.
U.S. officials say that M1 Abrams tanks are too difficult for Ukraine to maintain. The Abrams has a jet engine, requires a jet fuel. What's your response to that?
I think these are a series of statements that are not terribly inaccurate, but it's sort of a condescending attitude. And I would say, let the Ukrainians figure it out. They can figure out how to do the fuel. We do it. Egyptians do it. Saudis do it.
It will enable the Ukrainians to be successful.
The U.S. says its long-term goal is to give Ukraine the strongest possible position at the negotiating table. It doesn't use the word victory.
The problem is the secretary never says what success is. And to me, this has been the missing thing all along. Instead of saying we want to help Ukraine win, we talk around that a little bit. If we don't get that part right here, this war will go on a lot longer than it could.
On German tanks, the National Security Council spokesman said today the U.S. was not, quote, arm-twisting Germany, but working inside the coalition to provide Ukraine what it needs. For more on all this, we turn to the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, Colin Kall, who joins us from the Pentagon. Colin Kall, welcome back to the NewsHour. As we heard from the Secretary of Defense earlier and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the goal of the weapons packages that the U.S. and allies have announced in the last day are to conduct what the U.S. calls combined arms in order for Ukraine to liberate occupied territory. And yet a key component of combined arms is the tank. So are you tying one of Ukraine's arms behind its back by not providing those Western tanks?
Thanks, Nick. Thanks for having me on. Look, I think the main message coming out of the Ukraine Defense Contact Group, which was this meeting of more than four dozen countries at Ramstein Air Base, was one of unity and solidarity in support of Ukraine. You know, as the lead-in noted, we announced a package in the last 24 hours of $2.5 billion of additional assistance. That brings the total to close to $27 billion since Russia's invasion last February. All told, allies and partners have provided enough armor for several mechanized brigades. So as Secretary of Defense Austin made clear, we do believe that we are providing Ukraine the capabilities in combination with the training to allow them to change the dynamic on the battlefield and really move away from the kind of trench-style warfare that we're seeing in places like Bakhmut and Soledar to, being better able to combine fire and maneuver.
Brigades, of course, an average of about 3,500 troops each, kind of the building blocks for how the U.S. thinks about how to fight. But didn't we see at the beginning of the war what happens when you don't conduct combined arms? The Russians, after all, did it piecemeal, and the Ukrainians picked them apart. So is there still the ability for Ukraine to conduct what the U.S. calls combined arms without these Western tanks it wants?
I have no doubt that the Ukrainians can engage in combined arms warfare, but it's not just about stuff. It's about the training, the collective training in particular. We're working alongside Ukrainian forces to precisely train them on the types of combined arms maneuver warfare that you referenced. And I'll just say on the tanks issue, you know, we saw from the German defense minister today that they're still engaged in ongoing deliberations on the Leopards. We know that there are more than a dozen countries that also have Leopard tanks, and they're having conversations with Germany. So I think we just have to let this process play out.
When it comes to U.S. M1 Abrams tanks, you heard retired Lieutenant General Ben Hodges, former commander of U.S. Army Europe, call the argument that the Abrams is too difficult to maintain because of its jet engine and jet fuel, quote, condescending, and the Ukrainians can figure out how to keep the M1 Abrams going. Why do you think they can't?
Well, I don't think the argument is that they can't. The question is, can you deliver the capability on a relevant time frame and at a level that's sustainable over time? And the challenge with the Abrams is it's expensive, it's difficult to train on, it is very difficult to sustain, it has a huge complicated turbine engine that requires jet fuel. And frankly, if we're looking at delivering the Ukrainians a capability they can use in the next couple of months to try to change the dynamic on the battlefield, our assessment is just that the Abrams is not the right capability at this time.
Another way to change the dynamic on the battlefield would, of course, be to threaten Crimea, which Russia has occupied since 2014. Is it a U.S. goal to enable Ukraine to threaten Russia's hold on Crimea?
Crimea, legally and in the eyes of most of the world, Vladimir Putin notwithstanding, is Ukraine. So it is occupied Ukraine, and if the Ukrainians decide to conduct operations in Crimea, that is their decision.
The British Foreign Secretary James Cleverly was in Washington, D.C. this past week, and he said this: if we want to bring this to a successful conclusion, we should look to bring it to a conclusion quickly. The conclusion has to be Ukrainian victory. That is not a word that the United States uses. Why not?
Well, because it's not our word to choose. The Ukrainians will be the ones who define what the parameters of success are in their campaign. I will say this. It has been our strategic objective to enable the Ukrainians to achieve success as they define it, and also to ensure that the conflict is a strategic failure for Vladimir Putin and Russia. And in that, the war to date has been a huge failure for Russia. Ukraine endures as an independent, sovereign, democratic country. Russia wanted to end that. NATO is stronger, it's not weaker. The world is more united, not more divided, and Russia is weaker, not stronger. So along every metric that Vladimir Putin set out at the beginning of this war, he has failed, and I expect he will continue to do so.
Does that mean you're trying to give Ukraine enough weapons to make sure that Russia doesn't win, but not enough weapons for Ukraine to achieve victory?
We are providing Ukraine the capability they need to re-seize the territory that Russia occupied from them. The exact parameters of Ukrainian success or victory is something that the government in Kyiv will define.
Colin Call, finally, while I have you, you were then Vice President Biden's national security advisor at the end of the Obama administration in January 2017. What were the vice president and yours practices when it comes to handling classified documents, which, of course, is in the news? And going forward, will you cooperate with any kind of special counsel or congressional request for an investigation?
Look, I know there's a lot of interest in this topic. I can't really comment on it given the ongoing DOJ investigation. But like the rest of the administration, I stand ready to cooperate. And I know that officials at the White House and other senior officials have made that clear. We'll do everything we need to do to cooperate with the Department of Justice.
Colin Call, thank you very much.
Thank you.